Invisible Illness. For the purpose of this podcast, this term will encompass hidden mental and physical conditions.
We're Freya and Liv, students at the University of Nottingham, and in each episode, we will be exploring the impact these invisible conditions can have.
That's why, this episode, we talked to Maddie about her experience living with chronic fatigue syndrome.
Just a heads up, some people might find some of the things we discuss here uncomfortable.
If you need it, there will be useful contact details in the description below. Chronic fatigue, or ME, as it is sometimes referred to, can be easily misunderstood, as it means you're always tired even with copious amounts of rest and sleep. That's because, in layman's terms, cells in your body don't produce enough energy to make the normal biological processes happen at a typical rate, according to research. This, in turn, triggers a domino effect. Because the energy supply to the heart is impaired, it struggles to pump blood to all the organs, which causes it to malfunction.
So Maddie, a quick Google search of the term invisible illness comes up with a number of definitions. What do you think of the definition that we've come up with for this podcast?
I think the idea of physical and mental illnesses often being hidden is really important. Because, I mean, we go through life interacting with people, socialising with people, and we often don't realise the sort of health problems that they might be, like, suffering with, but that we don't necessarily pick up on from our immediate perceptions of them. So I think it's really good to raise awareness of the fact that there's a lot more going on beneath the surface. So I think a lot of people think of chronic fatigue and they just think of the sort of general tiredness that uni often brings with it, especially for students. I mean, loads of people think of student life as a time for naps and like spending all day in bed or just having really long lie-ins. And I think a lot of people underestimate how challenging it can be to be a student and have genuine like medical tiredness as like a full-time thing. So it's not just like physical exhaustion, it is mental as well. I find it really hard to concentrate or to get motivation because it's just an effort to keep my eyes open or to sit at a chair when all you want to do is be in bed or be asleep or just be like curled up in a ball somewhere. I think a lot of people have the expectation that you can just pull yourself out of it a bit. So sometimes I'll have to say no to a night out, but people say, oh, it's okay because you don't have much on tomorrow, or why don't you come join this club with me? And I'll be like, I would genuinely love to, but I just really can't. Pretty much every activity that I do, I have to weigh up in terms of how much am I going to have to recover afterwards. So a big night out, I could have to like pretty much 2 days in bed afterwards, might be what it needs for me to feel relatively normal again. And I think that can be quite isolating because most people are able to bounce back and they don't really understand how many limitations I have to put on myself. I don't know how you classify a long walk, because for me, a long walk is pretty much any walk. But say if I go shopping in town, or if I go on a night out and I like start dancing, then I will really enjoy it, and it doesn't stop me from wanting to do it. But I definitely have to keep in the back of my mind that the more I do, or the longer period of physical activity I do, the more I'm going to feel it later or the next day. I mean, obviously, everyone knows the feeling that you get when you just haven't had enough sleep. But I think the thing with fatigue is that you could have all the sleep in the world and you would still feel it. You would still feel that sort of crippling sense of, oh my God, I just really need to get into bed right now. And it does, it goes beyond like a physical sensation. It's like, it gets into your head. You just don't feel like you can concentrate, you don't feel like you can think. It's not the kind of tired where you can just sit in bed and watch Netflix. Like, there's nothing that can alleviate it, basically. It's not just like, oh, I'm gonna have a chill out day today. It's like, I'm gonna have a day where all I do is sleep. And I think a lot of people who do get into that sort of tired zone that uni seems to put you into, they kind of find it hard to differentiate between their own experience of it and my own.
So, according to the NHS, chronic fatigue syndrome is a long-term illness with a wide range of symptoms. And actually, something that I find really interesting, which I think a lot of people don't realise, is that these symptoms vary often massively from person to person.
Yeah, chronic fatigue can affect basically anyone, including children, including adults, including old people. It's most common in women and tends to develop between your mid-20s and mid-40s. Obviously, in Maddie's case, it developed a lot earlier than that. So,
she goes on to kind of tell us about later on.
Yeah, it's not as common maybe in her age range when she first discovered it, but it can really happen to anyone. The symptoms of chronic fatigue, I mean, the main symptom is just feeling incredibly tired and generally unwell, but it's I think it's a level of tiredness that extends just beyond feeling sleepy or whatever.
In fact, Maddie goes on to tell us later on about the fact that when she is feeling at her worst, like, it's not just like a chill day, as she describes it. It's not just a case of laying in bed and perhaps watching a film or something like that. It's
complete exhaustion.
Yeah.
Also, the problem with this is it also causes things like sleep problems because of an irregular sleep pattern. Muscle and joint pain, headaches, sore throat or sore glands, general sort of flu-like symptoms, and then problems thinking, remembering or concentrating. It can even lead to things like heart palpitations, dizziness, sickness, inability to do things like exercise, etc.
But again, it can, like, the symptoms vary massively from person to person, and I think that's something that I kind of hadn't realised before we kind of spoke to Maddie and also did the research about chronic fatigue.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very easy, as Maddie says, for people who are at uni to think that they have a certain level of understanding, I think, of what that level of fatigue is. But as we did research on chronic fatigue, I think it's a lot more physically draining than people realise.
Not just
realize.
Physically, though. I think it's also, from talking to Maddie, I think I'd kind of not thought about the mental brain.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a psychological impact for a number of reasons, I suppose. And things that Maddie's told me about is just, you know, sleeping, being tired all the time, it's difficult, on top of feeling like you're missing out on things with your friends, on top of feeling like you can't function.
I think as well, like you've kind of touched on briefly, like a lot of people don't fully understand, because everyone at times feels tired or drained. I feel like when someone is suffering from chronic fatigue, it goes beyond that in a way that no one fully perhaps understands.
I think it's difficult. Maddie does a very good job of trying to explain it, and later on she kind of uses a metaphor that I think is quite useful in describing what it feels like. But I think that's part of the problem with something like chronic fatigue, and why it's so difficult for people to empathise with, is that people are like, well, I feel tired, I know what it's like to feel tired. And I think for Maddie, you do get the frustration from her, especially later on when she's like, it's not just feeling tired, it's feeling like you physically can't do anything.
It's often difficult for family to get it, because they're often the people that have to make the most adjustments to their lives. Like friends or sort of extended family, they don't see you as much, and you can sort of mask it to some extent. But when it's family and they realise that actually, like, their holiday plans are going to be disrupted because I can't do the activities that they want to do, or that you don't sort of fit the stereotype of like a normal daughter and the sort of normal activities that like a teenager would be able to do. I think my mum and dad found that frustrating, and they were always sort of encouraging me to do more or to go out with my friends more or go on more nights out, and I find that it was difficult to cope with that. And I think even though they are a bit better with it now, I think sometimes they sort of slip back into it, and I have to remind them that, you know, I will never be the person that I think they expected me to be. I think the best example to give was probably when my dad, literally, he just did not get it. He was like, why don't I have like a sporty kid? Why doesn't she want to go to the gym? Why has she stopped horse riding and netball? And I just sort of had to say, I genuinely can't keep up. I don't have the stamina, I don't have the ability. And he still didn't really get it. He was like, well, maybe if you built it up slowly, like go to the gym, it would help. And I think one day I said it to him, like, imagine if you had like a bear sitting on your back and it was like digging your claws in and it was just making you want to like sink into the ground. Imagine going to the gym or going horse riding or going swimming when you had a bear sitting on your back, draining all of your energy out of you. And for some reason, that is what made it click for him, that it wasn't just in my head, it was like a physical experience that drags you down when you're trying to move and get through stuff. So now sometimes he'll text me like, hope you're not feeling any bears today, or hope there aren't too many bears today. And that is really nice, I think, but it does to some extent just show how difficult it is for some people to recognise how much of an issue it is for me. Like, I can't just pull myself out of it. I can't just say, oh yeah, I will get out of bed, because actually, like, I just feel really unable to do it. And there's pretty much nothing that you could say to me that would make me want to get out of bed. You could say, oh, there's your favourite celebrity downstairs, or like, your favourite meal has just been cooked for you. If I'm in one of those states where it's just exhaustion, there is just nothing that you can really do except wait it out and wait to start feeling it begin to reside. I think probably like the first time I recognised that I was different in terms of energy levels and like capacity to do like physical exertion as well was when I was in primary school, and suddenly like all the kids doing after school activities, I just could not keep up with them. And I've been having to have naps after school days since I was about 8, which obviously made making friends pretty difficult. Sometimes during like primary school and secondary school, I had to have a reduced timetable, which it does make it harder to establish friendships and to get through exam periods or coursework. It means that you have to be like the odd one out in PE, because often I just didn't have the energy to join in. And it definitely contributed to that sense of like isolation that I mentioned before. And it definitely was a factor in when I got really depressed during GCSEs, because everyone had sort of entered that teenage phase of going out and starting to meet boys and drinking a lot. And I just didn't really get the chance to join in with that experience, because my friends would invite me out to house parties, or I'd get like people saying, oh, do you want to go to town later? And I'd just have to say like, oh, I'm sorry, like, I wish I could, but I'm going back to bed. And I think people try as much as they can to carry on inviting you or like to message you, but when you're never really able to give them much back in terms of like going out together or actually like making sure that the plans that you arrange go forward instead of having to cancel at the last minute, people start to make less of an effort. And I don't blame them for that, but it definitely contributed to that sense of like distancing that I experienced throughout GCSEs and sixth form. And it took a long time for me to build up the confidence to say to people, like, pretty much as soon as I first met them, like, you know, I have an illness, which means that I might not be the best friend to you in terms of like going out together, but like if you want someone who will tag you in memes all day on Facebook, or who will be pretty good at replying to your texts, or I'll send you recipes of foods that I think you'll really like, then I'm your girl. When I first got on the medication that I was on, it had like quite a dramatic effect, and I was able to actually do quite a lot more than I had been able to for a while, and that made getting through my A-levels quite a lot easier than it was getting through my GCSEs. So I did really well in that, but then the sort of initial like wow effect gradually wore off. And I think going into uni and having to sort of lower my expectations of what I was capable of getting was quite difficult, because I've always been a fairly high achiever, and it makes it difficult for me to think that actually I'd be getting better grades if I wasn't ill, just because I'd have more time and more hours in the day that I would be able to commit to working or reading, studying, and not just being in bed. But the uni has been fairly good in making sure that I've got extensions if I need them, and I get extra time for exams, and I get time for like rest breaks if I need them. But it was quite a lot of hassle in the first place to get like the disability form that I needed to be able to prove that actually I was entitled to these things. So I think maybe that process could be easier, because it sort of fails to take into account that the people that are like pursuing a disability sort of certification, things are difficult enough for them already. And that actually going to all the effort and like having to get all the documents in place, going to all these appointments, it can be quite draining in itself.
A big part of what Maddie talks about in this section is to do with isolation, and also to do with, I think, growing up with something as debilitating as CFS and the way that it changes your experience of being a young person, of being a teenager.
Not just being a teenager, I feel, but also she talks about her experiences at primary school and how already at that point she was kind of having a different experience to her peers because of CFS.
It's almost rites of passage, I want to say, that she's had to miss out on, or that's
experience
been
experienced differently.
Yeah, that have been altered by this illness that, you know, she didn't ask for it. She didn't do anything that made the illness appear. It was just there. But because of that, so much of her growing up was changed, I think, and her relationships and her ability to interact with her friends and peers. I think when you're young and you're a teenager and you're first experiencing going out and having fun with your mates and stuff, there's a tendency to potentially be less empathetic. And although I don't want to say, oh, Maddie's friends weren't empathetic, because I'm sure they very much were, there's a tendency for everyone to get very wrapped up in their own lives. And I think it's easy for people to fall behind. And it's something that's common with a lot of conditions, is this feeling of socially missing out on things. And even if your friends include you as far as they can and as much as anything, there's always going to be the social difficulty that comes along with the illness.
And I also think, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit already, but I think it's worth just going back to, is that actually with chronic fatigue syndrome, a lot of people think that they may get it because everybody experiences being tired, but actually I feel like fatigue and chronic fatigue is very much different to just being tired. So like friends and people who are kind of trying to support people with chronic fatigue might find it difficult to kind of understand the extreme tiredness that people are experiencing.
To a certain extent, I think that even someone who experiences a condition in those early stages, it's very difficult to understand what's happening to you. And Maddie, I know personally, because Maddie's a friend of mine, that she can push herself to do things that make her so tired for the sake of maintaining good relationships. But that's incredibly difficult. And I think at a young age, especially if you're looking at primary school and going into secondary school, the understanding of what is going on and what's happening to you is not something that you come to terms with straight away. And especially with the diagnosis of CFS, there's no specific test for chronic fatigue. It's based on your symptoms, and that's how it's diagnosed, is by basically ruling out other conditions that could be causing your symptoms. But also, CFS is very much linked to mental illness as well, and it's very much linked to depression especially, and it can become complicated because there's a neglect to want to diagnose CFS if someone has already got existing mental health issues, and because it's based on ruling out other possibilities, it's very difficult to get treatment if you're struggling with other difficulties. And unfortunately, as Maddie goes on to explain, she was.
I think there's a huge link between mental health conditions and chronic fatigue, and often doctors will sort of, they will group them together, because often people who have depression or who have anxiety will just experience like a general fatigue with life, and I think it's quite difficult to separate the two. I mean, I've experienced depression quite badly, so a lot of the doctors are reluctant to treat chronic fatigue as a separate issue, and they'll sort of say, oh, you know, maybe if you try different medication then that would like alleviate your tiredness as a symptom. But it really hasn't, so I'm trying to pursue a referral separately for my chronic fatigue. But because it's on my medical records that I've had a history of mental illness, they're just quite unwilling to do it. I've got like a history of depression stretching back like maybe 6 years. So as soon as doctors look at my medical records, they will see chronic fatigue is classed as a symptom of depression, not as a medical problem in itself. But then if you go and try and get help for depression, they'll say, well, actually, there's not really much we could do about that unless you're just willing to take medication. But I'm already on medication, so it's kind of like chasing around in circles, trying to get somewhere. And a lot of the time, chronic fatigue isn't really a treatable illness in the first place. So it's difficult, but I'm on my second round of blood tests now, and there is some optimism that I might get a referral for the chronic fatigue services through uni, but I'm not holding out too much hope on it. In uni first year, it was hard for people to understand that when uni is like associated with going on nights out and things, so it made it more difficult for me to form bonds that people did, like going to crisis or going on like 5 nights out in a row in Freshers Week. So I did find that really difficult. It meant that there was more pressure on me to sort of attend seminars and like push myself sitting next to people at lectures, because that was often the only opportunity I got to like have actual social interaction, because the rest of the day I just spent in bed. I think it was really difficult in first year, and I was really glad that when I eventually did get like a solid group of friends, they were really supportive of it. They don't push me too much, and they kind of get it if I have to cancel on them last minute or if I'm just not always like fit to do the kind of things that they would be up for. But it also meant that I was kind of limited in the extent I could throw myself into first year. But I definitely benefited from having my boyfriend with me. We came to uni together, and part of the reason for that was just because he is, I don't know why, because he's never experienced it himself, like no one in his family has it, but he's amazing at dealing with chronic fatigue. He understands it more than anyone I know, more than my family, and he tries the best he can to make my general experience of uni a lot easier, and he supports me in as many ways as he can alongside his own degree. I mean, it still happens now, but in first year particularly, when there was a night out that I wanted to go on, like if all my friends are going out and I said, you know, I will actually come to this one, I wouldn't go into uni for the whole day and I would just spend the whole day in bed. And then I would begin to slowly, throughout the course of the afternoon, begin to prepare myself for it. I'd have to make sure I didn't have anything on the next day either, because I will never be one of those people who can like power through a hangover or like get over the fact that I got in at 4 o'clock in the morning. It'll be a struggle to get through it, but often it is worth it if you know that it means you can see all your friends and you can experience a proper night out of feeling like a normal teenager or a normal student.
I think that going to uni for the first time is a big change in everyone's lives. But I have a lot of admiration actually for Maddie, because I feel like if you're struggling with an invisible illness, any invisible illness, but also something like CFS, it must be especially difficult, because it does make it more difficult to establish friendships. And it does mean that you aren't always at times able to participate in the activities that most other students are participating in.
I think it does take a lot, and I don't think it's necessarily recognised how much it takes a lot for people. I've been reading about personal accounts of experiencing CFS apart from what Maddie's told us about, and something that really struck me was the fact that it can be so severe that it prevents young people from attending school, from attending university, from even being able to go through the application process for university. And this is talking about, they say for around 1 in 100 children are thought to develop the disease. And in some respects, there's this idea of options being taken away from you based on something that you can't control. And Maddie talks about how lucky she's kind of been in some respects to find friendships and stuff.
And people who do understand that actually, although Maddie might want to do all these things, sometimes she just can't, and that's not a reflection on their friendship. It's just the hard, difficult fact that sometimes you just can't right now. And I think that as soon as people understand that then it becomes maybe a little bit easier.
There's, I think, a difficulty in being open with the people who you care about, especially when you're first forming friendships, because I think it's very difficult to go up to someone who you want to be friends and be like, hi, just so you know, like, sometimes I might have to go off the grid because I will just be too tired, too fatigued to spend time with you.
And it's kind of the question of how much do you share with someone that you first meet? Because if people don't know these things about you, maybe they'll think that actually you're not going to be a great friend, but actually it's not necessarily your fault that you can't go out with them all the time and that you might have to cancel at the last minute. But if you don't know someone that well, you might not want to share personal information with someone if you don't know that you can trust them with it. And I think that must be something that's really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising that a lot of people who suffer with chronic fatigue may become depressed. And while depression doesn't necessarily cause chronic fatigue, it can cause an increase in fatigue. So it's kind of a cycle where you feel so tired, you can't go out, you can't spend time with your friends, you get down. Getting down makes you more likely to just stay in bed and become more fatigued. And I think it's probably very difficult to get out of that cycle of behavior or cycle of mental process. I think that's something that Maddie has grappled with for a very long time. And at times when we have discussions about it, it's very obvious that it's just incredibly frustrating.
And I think as well, chronic fatigue, because it means that you sometimes can't do all the things that you want to, you can't always go out with your friends and interact with your friends. I feel like it could probably cause you to feel quite isolated. And this, again, probably then doesn't help with mental health, because if you're feeling quite isolated and alone all the time, I imagine it's not going to be a nice feeling, and I imagine it's not a nice place to be. And I think it's really important that people with not just chronic fatigue but also more generally invisible illnesses, I think it's really important that they have people around them who...
A support system.
Yeah, it's really important that they have a support system and a close group of friends and family who kind of get it. They might not firsthand experience chronic fatigue or other invisible illnesses, but I think it's important that you have sympathetic people around you who can kind of empathise with you. Has anyone ever used or said anything similar to you that is along the lines of, but you don't look sick?
I think probably yeah, but I don't know. I mean, you get to have quite a thick skin, and I don't think I would necessarily take it in that much. I'm sure they have, because most of the time I do make an effort to look not as exhausted as I feel. So I think that you don't get that immediate, like, perception that someone might have of someone with a more obvious disability. They wouldn't get that with me. But in general, I think people, once you explain it to them, they're usually quite sympathetic, even if they don't fully understand, like, the extent of the problem.
We've titled this podcast, But You Don't Look Sick. What does this phrase mean to you?
I think it means a lot, to be honest, because most people, when they first meet me, definitely won't think of me as, like, a sick person, because I am quite normal. Like, I mean, I can get up in the morning, I don't have, like, an obvious physical disability. But then when people get to know me more, they realise there's a lot I can't do. Like, I spend pretty much 80% of my time asleep or in some sort of, like, semi-coma state. So it is really important that people realise that a lot of illnesses and disabilities don't necessarily, like, I mean, you can't hold up a sign above your head saying, please be nice to me.
Each week we ask the people that feature on this podcast to give a word that they feel best sums up their experience.
Maddie's going to go next.
Frustrating.
Resilience.
Courage.
Tune in to our next episode as we continue our exploration into invisible illness. You can find us on URN's Facebook page, Audio Boom, and Mixcloud.
This is URN.